This is Papa Prell. I'm back on the Papa Prell show, and this, of course, is our first show for the season. I just want to take a moment to thank our distinguished guest, Miss Tina Thompson, who so graciously agreed to appear on our show now. Miss Tina Thompson, first I'd like to remind the listeners out there that they are listening to KZSU Stanford. And this, of course, is the Papa Prell Show. Now, just have a couple of questions for you, Tina Thompson, who's our distinguished guest on the Papa Prell Show. Tina, as you all know, is the president of the, America for the Non-Americans Movement. Is that it?
That's right, Mr. Prell. America for Non-Americans Movement.
America for Non-Americans.
That's right, and I am the president of this organization.
Well, that's just fine. That's real fine.
Thank you. And I'd like to thank you for giving me this opportunity to come here today and just to sort of express what I and a great many number of Americans are feeling today.
Well, I'm really glad that you showed up. For a moment there, I thought you weren't going to. If you know, I mean, in the past, quite a few of my guests haven't shown up. You're the first one here in a long time. Now, Tina, I want to ask you a little bit more about your movement, which, as I understand, deals mainly with bringing political refugees in from Central America and Cuba. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Prell. We don't really like to think of them as refugees, but rather as persecuted people. We like to
persecuted
think of them,
people,
that's
I,
right,
I see.
Victims of all sorts of persecution, whether it be hunger, political persecution.
Right, right.
There are all sorts of needy people in this world.
I understand that, but there's just a couple of questions I meant to ask some of the legalities here. Now, as I understand it, if you are an economic refugee, you can not get into the United States as easily because there's a restricted quota. However, if you are a political refugee, not only do you get easier entrance into the United States of America, but you also get 10 years tax-free exemption. Is that correct?
I believe that is correct, Mr.
All right. You also get instant status on the welfare system. Is that also correct?
Yes, Mr. Prell, but I don't think these things are of major
importance. Well, as what I'm driving at, Miss Tina, Miss Thompson, actually, Miss Tina Thompson, is that by absorbing all these masses of political refugees, we're going to have ourselves a whoop-de-dow in Congress trying to appropriate all the funds for these people. Is this correct? I mean, if we're having a hard time paying, giving the starving food now, who are legitimate Americans, what's going to happen when we get all those non-Americans in here who legally have permission to draw from the welfare? That's what I'd like to know.
Mr. Prell, could I just interrupt you for a moment?
Well, you just go right ahead, sweetie.
I'd like to remind you that at one time you and I both were non-Americans, at least our ancestors were.
Now listen here, I was there on the invasion of the Normandy invasion, D-Day. I was a Marine, I fought for this country, I consider myself as American as they come.
That's very wonderful.
All right, then. I just wanted to set the record straight.
There are many non-Americans who would love to become Americans and would feel just as patriotic about this country given the chance.
I know that, but honey, as you well know, there's millions and millions of non-Americans who want to be Americans because of the economic benefits in which this country receives. And if we try to absorb them all, we are going to become exactly from what they are running from. If they are stricken in all Central America, you can take a map and superimpose it over the United States of America, and you will find that that continent down below us is almost as large as the United States of America. So, naturally, if we move all the people from down there, we're going to have something quite similar up here.
Mr. Prell, may I say two words to you at this time?
Two words. Go right ahead, honey.
The two words are melting pot.
Melting pot.
Yes, and may I go on further on this? We are not only talking about Central and South Americans. We are talking about people from all over the world.
Honey pie, I understand what you're driving at, but what I'm suggesting here, and I don't think you're listening too closely, is that we have to draw the line somewhere. I mean, just the other day I was reading something in the Palo Alto Weekly talking about these refugees coming in from Mexico, and they're illegal Americans, but they're talking about it in the newspaper like it's a matter of fact, and like it's totally illegal, and nobody's ashamed of the fact, and like they're daring the police to go in and raid them, send them back from where they came from.
Oh, I don't...
Now, honey, child, I'm just as sympathetic as the next man. I want to see these people fed. However, when you're fleeing from the plague, you can't expect the next fort to let you in, because by saving you from the plague, you may take the plague from which you run right to the very fort for which you go. Now, does that make sense to you, honey?
No sense whatsoever, Mr. Prell. On that subject of the article in the Palace.
Well, I think this is a good time to take some of our callers. The number is 328-2000, and you just keep ringing. If I don't pick up on you right away, you can rest assured I'll get to you right away. So that's 328-2000. Give us a call. Let us know what you feel. Go right ahead, honey. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Okay, thanks very much. Anyway, I wanted to say about that subject, the people are here.
I also wanted to bring up this L.A. thing. Now, recently, L.A.'s been made a sanctuary for Central American refugees, be it political or economic. I don't know what the difference is anymore. But they can come in, and if they make it L.A., they're legal. Now, I'd like to understand what the rationale was behind there, and then what this talk is about making Palo Alto such a place.
Well, I think the rationale comes from a basic humanitarian spirit, which is helping your fellow man.
I know, but in the Army, I served one loyal year in the Red Cross, and occasionally we just had to let a man die in order so that another man could live. You can't solve all everyone's problems. Sometimes you have to make sacrifices. It's not fun, but we won the war, damn it, and that's how we did it. Winston Churchill deliberately let some towns get bombed, even though he knew they were threatened, because by letting the enemy know that he knew that they knew, that would have, of course, destroyed their intelligence system. Millions of people died, but it was a necessary sacrifice. And likewise, I submit to you, that number's 328-2000, that occasionally you have to let another man suffer so that another man may not suffer. And we're having problems feeding our poor now, so how are we going to feed all the world's poor? Comment.
Well, Mr. Prell, I wanted to make a comment way back when you were talking about intelligence systems.
Go right ahead, honey.
Because at the time I was doubting...
That number is 328-2000. I'm still waiting for our first caller. Now, I know some of you out there have got something to say about it.
I would just like to say, for one thing, that your reaction is totally reactionary.
You are
attacking this thing from a gut-level emotional
now,
response.
Now, I'm not attacking it, honey. Does anybody out there think I'm attacking it? No, I'm being a very intellectual, discussion.
If you would sit back and not let your emotions take over and think about this problem of all these people...
Oh, wait a minute, honey. I think we got our first call. Our first call here? Okay, remember that number, 328-2000. Go right ahead, caller. Caller, are you with us? Caller, give us that call.
Hey,
yeah.
Am I on?
Yeah, you're on. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just want to know if, you know, like, what you guys are always saying is true.
Oh, yeah, it's
you
true.
You know, what's that be? Okay,
don't mind
what that. What you guys are always saying, you know, at the very start you guys say?
Yeah, that's true.
No, not that. About Mystery Playhouse is sponsored by comics and comics, toys, and games.
Said quote, Mystery Playhouse is sponsored by comics and comics, toys, and games at 405 California Avenue, unquote. We now return you to the music of Raymond Rocello, playing for you.
Those preachers know what that means. what anything means. Wait a minute, something's happening.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast.
Now here's another bulletin from Washington, D.C.
Martial law prevails throughout. Ladies and gentlemen, I have a grave announcement to make.
So that we may confront this destructive adversary.
Everything wiped out. This may be the last broadcast. We'll stay here to the end.
There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling the transmission. We control the volume.
We can change the tone to a fuzzy bass.
Or focus it to a tinny treble.
We can speed things up so fast you can hardly understand what's being said.
Or we can make things so slow you don't care.
We control the content. We can make it boring.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive. It's our show. We can do anything we want, because this is...
Mystery Playhouse. 90.1.
Vampirella, I tell you that Papa Prowl is really scary.
Yeah, especially his views, Count.
Oh, yes.
He's a scary guy.
I should probably submit humbly at this point that his views do not necessarily reflect the opinions of yous, of KZSU, management, board of trustees, or anyone involved, especially us.
Especially us.
Very, very, very scary. But we've got a very, very even more scarier show for you this week. Even though most of the students are away, the rats will play. So shall we do it, Vampirella?
Let's do it.
Let's start them off with the adventures of Superman.
It was like the end of the world. There was destruction everywhere. People scrambled around in hysterical panic. Cars and buses and taxis were slamming into each other by the second. Mass confusion reigned here in downtown Metropolis like never before. And the cause of all this?
No. I don't know what got into me. I didn't mean to cause all that destruction. I'm sorry. So sorry.
The time, 4 a.m. The place, an apartment at 344 Clinton Street in Metropolis, where newscaster Clark Kent has been suffering through a night of fitful sleep.
Phew. That was some nightmare. The city looked like a tornado swept through it. The only trouble was, I was the tornado. After waking up from something like that, I could use a breath of fresh air.
The man that gets out of bed is accustomed to having the problems of the world upon his massive shoulders, whether asleep or awake. For this man, opening the window in his pajamas, is secretly the mighty Superman himself.
Great Krypton! Buildings demolished, cars piled up, people scrambling around in mass confusion. Then it wasn't a dream. It was all horribly real.
In stunned disbelief, the Man of Steel switches on his TV in search of some sort of explanation.
And here at the scene, our cameras clearly show the extent of the destruction, indicating it was truly a miracle that no lives were lost, although a small number of people were injured. And as unthinkable as it is to believe, all the eyewitnesses name the same culprit, Superman.
That's impossible. I was here asleep.
The mayor and law enforcement officials are said to be meeting right now to discuss what sort of action should be taken against Superman for this despicable display of superpowers on a rampage. As soon as a decision is reached, WGBS-TV will relay the information to you viewers. This is Lois Lane, here in the West of Third Avenue, returning you now to our students.
Thank you, Lois. We'll have more news after this commercial break.
Friends, do you ever worry about perspiration odor?
At least I think I was here asleep. Is it possible, conceivable, that I sleepwalked out of my apartment and went berserk as Superman? Could the memory of my rampage be so unbearable I blotted it out, thinking it was only a dream?
But wait, I've just been handed a bulletin. A small army of police have surrounded the laboratory retreat of arch-criminal Lex Luthor. All efforts to force him out in the open have been stymied by Luthor's arsenal of super-scientific weapons. Ordinarily, the police force would broadcast a plea to Superman for help. But in view of his recent wild rampage...
If it was me on that rampage, I should turn myself in. But not while Lex Luthor is still at large. Bringing in that fiend may be my last official act as Superman, but it's got to be done. And now!
Meanwhile, at the scene of the crisis, a deserted pavilion left behind from the 1968 Metropolis World's Fair.
Come on with your hands above your head, Luthor. We've got you completely surrounded, and more reinforcements are on the way.
You can call in the entire police force of Gotham City while you're at it, but there's no way any of you can break through the impenetrable force field that's projected around the pavilion. No way!
We've got the heavy artillery set up now, Chief.
All right, give the man the order to fire.
I don't believe it. Not one of them connected. I mean, we can't even see that crazy barrier, but it stops anything short of an A-bomb.
Don't kid yourself. Probably Megatron proved along with everything. Superman!
I'm here to help.
I don't know if I should try to arrest you myself or call the Marines first.
I won't offer any resistance, Chief, as long as you let me arrest Luthor first.
But how do we know you won't turn wild again? I don't know.
Let's face it, Chief. Nothing we've got is going to get us inside that barrier. Superman's the only guy on Earth who can crack it.
Okay, Superman, you're on. Do what you do best.
My pleasure, Chief.
Like it wasn't even there.
Why do you think they call him Superman, Chief?
Could make it, Superman. I've been expecting you.
What kind of no good are you up to this time, Luthor? And what's the purpose of the big gizmo sending a ray beam up into space?
That gizmo, as you put it, has been steadily stripping away a certain vital layer of the Earth's atmosphere for weeks now. What are you doing?
Melting your infernal machine into a puddle with my heat vision.
But it's too late, you cape fool. The damage has already been done.
What was it, Luthor? The ionosphere? The ozone layer?
No. It was something not even you have heard of, Superman. The Zota layer. But you'll never see it for yourself. My machine has destroyed it.
You deluded maniac!
But don't be alarmed. No one on Earth will be harmed, at least not directly. The only person who was protected by the Zota layer was you.
You've got exactly 3 seconds to start making sense.
There's a peculiar type of radiation out there that not even you are immune to, Superman. It affects your mind whenever you relax or go to sleep. Turns you into a wild man and makes you go absolutely berserk.
Great Scott! The destruction tonight in Metropolis...
That's right, old foe, it was you. And with the Zota layer gone, you can bet it will be happening a lot more often.
Superman did it! He bagged Luthor!
Luthor's not moving, is he?
Just unconscious. I knocked him out cold. He's all yours.
Thank you, Superman. No one else could have done it. I don't know what to say.
Say you'll put me under armed guard, Chief, and that you'll notify the President and the Pentagon at once. I'm afraid I've become a national menace.
It doesn't take long for the nightmarish news to sweep the world like a shockwave. The mighty Man of Steel, once a super champion, admired by billions, has proclaimed himself a wild man, afraid of going on an uncontrollable rampage at any moment.
This is Lois Lane for WGBS. Ordinarily, Clark Kent would be delivering this newscast, but being such a close friend of Superman's, he has been too upset to report him for work. And that is easy to understand considering today's top story. President Fairlane spent the morning in conference with the nation's top scientists to discuss perhaps the greatest problem mortal men have ever had to bear, the fate of Superman.
And even as a distressed Lois delivers her grim newscast, the chief executive and the mightiest man on Earth are having a somber conference in the Oval Office of the White House.
People are afraid. Everyone knows now about the Zota layer and what can happen now that it's gone.
All they have to do is look at those 10 blocks in Metropolis you leveled to the ground.
I'm sorry, sir.
Not as sorry as I am, or the world will soon be, about what I have to ask them to do. None of our leading scientists knows any way of restoring the Delta layer that Luthor removed. I'm afraid we're only left with one alternative.
Yes, sir.
Superman, I must ask you to exile yourself from the planet Earth. Although your tremendous services to mankind will be gravely missed, I can fathom no other way of guaranteeing you won't go off on another destructive rampage.
Unfortunately, neither can I, sir.
Then it's settled.
Not quite, Mr. President. You realize, of course, that as soon as I'm off the Earth, Lex Luthor will use his super scientific wizardry to break jail. And with me gone, he'll do his best to rule the world with his fantastic machines.
You're right. And without a Superman to protect us, that bald-headed genius would probably succeed. Perhaps I should consult my advisors again.
No need, sir. The solution is simple. Have Luthor exiled from the Earth along with me. I'll make sure he never returns to menace anybody. It's the only way.
Yes, the only way.
It takes only one scant week for Superman to construct a 2-passenger interstellar rocket. Because he works without rest or relaxation, lest his mind succumb to the deadly radiation that has made him a potential wielder of doom. 1 week is all it takes for the career of the greatest superhero of all to come to an end.
And it's a beautifully executed launch, ladies and gentlemen, being broadcast all over the world simultaneously via satellite. Never in the history of mankind have so many people joined to watch one single event. And what a tragic event it is. The villainous Lex Luthor will not be missed. But Superman, watching Superman leave is the greatest loss the human race has ever faced. How we will fare in the world today.
We'll be free of Earth gravity in another 9.7 seconds. Enjoying the ride, Superman?
For a man leaving the world behind him, Luthor, you don't seem very concerned.
To tell you the truth, Superman, life on Earth would become quite boring without your meddling to contend with. Superman, you're breaking your straps. You're not supposed to get up until we finish climbing through the atmosphere.
Well, you see, old fool, I've just changed my mind. I'm going back to Earth alone.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about leaving, Luthor. I'm going to crash through the hull and leave you.
But you can't. You promised. If you break the hull, the ship will explode and I'll die.
When you gotta go, you gotta go.
Wait, Superman! No!
And moments later at the White House, as the news of the spaceship's destruction reaches a dismayed President Fairlane by phone.
The ship did what? I don't believe it. How could Superman have fouled up? Superman, what are you doing back here? What did you do to Luthor?
Nothing, yet. As if you didn't know.
But they told me you abandoned the ship, left Luthor to die in space.
I left an android in space, an artificial duplicate of Luthor, exact in every detail, except one detail, its builder neglected. When we were taking off, the fake Luthor was completely unaffected by the force of the G's on takeoff as we broke free of the Earth's atmosphere. The real Luthor would have shown the stress on his face.
Incredible. But if Luthor wasn't in that ship, where is he?
Nice try, Luthor, but you're just not presidential material.
What are you saying?
You're not the real President Fairlane. You're Lex Luthor, wearing a latex mask and a voice adapter.
Very clever, Superman. I really thought I had you this time, but I still got the upper hand.
How's that?
Only I know where I've hidden the real President Fairlane. And unless you let me go free, I'm not talking.
Is that right?
Oh, my face. It's so hot under this mask. I've got to take it off.
You'll never make it, Luthor. I'm using my heat vision to melt your President Fairlane mask.
Please, stop! It feels like 10 sunburns at once. The mask is so hot and gooey.
Sure, I'll stop. Just tell me where the real president is.
All right, you win. I'll take you to Fairlane. Just turn off the heat.
The next day, after President Fairlane is safely back in his office and Lex Luthor is safely behind bars, let's join Clark and Lois.
I don't get it, Clark. If there never was a Zeta layer in the atmosphere, what was that machine that Luthor's hideout Superman destroyed?
It was really a dream projector. Luthor beamed it at Superman's head when he flew overhead on patrol. And that night, he dreamed he went on a rampage.
But there really was a rampage. 10 blocks were leveled.
By a Superman android Luthor created with very limited strength. That's why Luthor chose 10 blocks that were mostly condemned buildings and ready to come down anyway.
Why is it you're so incredibly well-informed when it comes to Superman?
Just doing my best to stay on top of the news, Lois. Don't worry. One of these days, a scoop will come your way. Wait and see.
Just for that thought, Kent, life is on you.
It's alive! It's alive! Hello there. I'm going to set you free. Is the sedative ready?
Yes, Doctor.
Stand on your feet. You can do it. Now, walk.
Oh, Doctor, I'm frightened.
Don't worry.
What is it? What's the matter? Quick, give him the watch.
Give him the watch. Three syllables. First syllable sounds like...
KZSU, Stanford.
On the nosy.
Hitchcock present, apologizing that we have to meet here, in the cemetery of all places. But as you can see, I only have a half hour to dig this grave. For what? For something dead, of course. If I was going to bury something alive, don't you think I'd bury it in my backyard with all the others? Besides, that's why I'm so rushed. When it's dead, it rots and smells, which reminds me, here's our sponsor.
Suspense is brought to you by Primetime Radio of San Jose. Join KZSU every Tuesday night at 10:30 p.m. for more classic radio theater with Suspense.
Well, if that was live, imagine what the corpse would smell like. So I better keep on digging while you witness our feature, the Dunwich Horror.
Produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Come in, Dunwich, Massachusetts. Come in, Dunwich.
Good evening. This is Henry Armitage. I'm speaking to you for... Dr. Rice, please close the window. I'm speaking to you from my laboratory on the slopes of Sentinel Hill near Dunwich, Massachusetts. Present with me is Dr. Warren Rice, my distinguished colleague from Miskatonic University. We are now about 100 yards from the summit of the hill, which is crowned by a huge table-like stone set in the center of a circle of stone pillars, a place of prehistoric worship. A moment ago, you may have heard the dogs of Dunwich Township barking as we have heard them for 3 days and three nights. Dr. Rice and I know the horror which their barking portends, but the purpose of this broadcast is to make this unbelievable horror believable to you. I hope for your sakes and ours we are successful tonight. It is the eve of All Hallows. Tomorrow will be too late. Our time tonight is very short, so I'll speak only of those more recent events which, believe me, may culminate at any moment in a climax too frightful to wholly contemplate. I will begin with the birth of Wilbur Whately. It was the night of February the 2nd, 1921, Candlemas, toward dawn, when Lavinia Whately, a deformed albino woman about 35 years old, gave birth to her dark, goatish-looking son in the crumbling Whately farmhouse northeast of the village. No one attended her. No doctor or midwife. No one was with her, except her aged, half-insane father, who was known as Wizard Whately. So Wilbur came into this world under heaven knows what incantations, what appeals to what power. A week later, Wizard Whately drove his sleigh into Dunwich Village and reported the event to a group of loungers in Osborne's general store.
Hey, your grandson got yellow hair like Lavinia Wizard?
No, takes after his father more. He's dark, dark.
You never spoke of who his father might be now, did you?
Oh, you know his father when the time comes. Oh, Lavinia's read and seen some things the most of you only talk about. Calculate her husband's as good as you can find this side of Aylesbury.
Well, we don't be nosy, would you?
Maybe it warn't in no church that none of you heard of. But you wouldn't ask no better church wedding than Lavinia's.
Well, I didn't hear tell of no wedding, Wizard. When was that?
Oh, not a wedding you'd hear of, Corey. Not a husband you'd hear of, neither. But let me tell you something. Someday you folks will hear a child of Lavinia's calling its father's name on top of Sentinel Hill.
Prophecy? Or idle boasting by an insane old man? Now, I know I ask a great deal when I ask you to believe that the arrival of an infant into that house of dire poverty and squalor could possibly constitute a horror and a threat to all our known world. Yet it has an earthly history. Perhaps through this history, you will be able to give it credence. Wilbur Whately's growth was uncanny. But even if he had been an average child, he would have become, in time, an unnatural being, for he was surrounded from the first by the most malign influences. There was his grandfather, old Whately, Wizard Whately, who each Halloween climbed Sentinel Hill to the great circle of stone, and while the hills shook, stood holding a great book open on his arms and shrieked into the wind. Shrieked.
Yog-Sothoth.
That dreadful name, first mentioned in the hideous forbidden book, the Necronomicon. And this Wizard Whately was Wilbur's teacher. The villagers began to notice curious things that were going on at the Whately farmhouse. Soon after Wilbur was born, old Whately began to remodel the house. The abandoned upper story was restored, and all the windows were tightly boarded up. And then, Wizard began to buy cattle in large numbers, both horses and cows. Yet the livestock on the farm didn't seem to increase. Young Lem Brown was one day curious enough to creep close to the house to count the Whateley herd.
Dr. Armitage, there weren't more than 12 cows, and them thick. Looked like they had the blight and funny wounds on them, like cuts. I heard something, too, in the top part of Wizard's house. Something like water slapping inside, only big, big like a sea.
One other person went to the Whateley farm in the years before I met Wilbur. Dr. Ken Houghton of Aylesbury, who was called by Wilbur himself, who said that his grandfather was dying. Dr. Houghton found the old man in a bedroom on the ground floor, and Wilbur with him. While outside the window, a legion of whippoorwills cried loudly and rhythmically, endlessly. Wilbur spoke about the sound.
Certainly whistling time with his breathing now. They're ready. Listen, doctor. They know his soul's going out. They're waiting.
Yes, Wilbur, that's an interesting superstition. Late in the year for them, too.
And when he goes, if they catch him, they'll keep laughing till break of day. If they don't catch him, they'll quiet down.
You mean you believe that... In just a minute. I think he's conscious.
Yes, the birds changed when his breathing changed. Like
Willie,
I say.
Willie!
I'm here.
More space, Willie. Remember, more space soon.
Yes, I'll build it.
You grows, but that grows faster. It'll be ready to serve you soon, Willie.
I know.
But remember... When it's time, you open up the gates to Yog-Sothoth with a long chant. The one on page 751 of the book. But mind you, feed it enough. Because if it gets out before you open to Yog-Sothoth, it's all over. It's no use.
He's going now. He's dead, Wilbur.
Listen. The birds, they didn't catch him. Yes, he's free. He's gone.
It was the winter following Wizard Whateley's death that I first met Wilbur. He came in person to the library at Miskatonic University to consult a copy of the hideous Necronomicon, which was kept there in its Latin version, as printed in Spain in the 17th century. I tell you, when he came into my office, I was appalled at his appearance. 8 feet tall, shabby, dirty, bearded. But I was even more appalled by his voice when he spoke to me.
I wrote you a letter a month past, Doctor. I wanted a loan of the book.
Well, that's a book that's never loaned from this library. I doubt if it is from any library.
Well, I have to see it then.
Oh, very well. It's kept right here. As you know, there are only 3 copies of this book in existence. That's why we're careful. Here, you can look at it on this table.
Wizard said it would be on page 751.
What? What is it you're looking for?
The formula, the long chant, the one that opens the gate to Yog-Sothoth.
I felt a wave of fright as tangible as the draft from the tomb. It seemed somehow... Like the spawn of another dimension. Like something only partly of mankind. Linked to black gulfs beyond all spheres of force and matter, space and time. And presently he raised his head and spoke again.
It's here, all right. But I'll have to have a copy.
Well, that paragraph there? I don't know.
You know Latin, Doctor?
Yes, certainly.
Then read it, Doctor. Let's hear how you make it out.
All right, that shouldn't be difficult. Let's see. Nor is it to be thought that man is the oldest or the last of Earth's masters. The old ones were, and the old ones shall be. Not in the spaces that we know, but between them. But only Yog-Sothoth knows the gate. Yog-Sothoth is the gate to where the old ones broke through of old. Their hands are at your throats, yet ye see them not.
Dr. Armitage, you see, I reckon I've got to take that book home. There's things in it I've got to try, and you can't hold me up.
No, I'm sorry.
I tell you, Doctor, I'll have the book sooner or later, no matter what. You see, it that's waiting for me at home won't wait much longer.
A week later that I was awakened suddenly by the fierce yelping of the great watchdog on the campus, followed by a sound from a wholly different throat, a scream. And I knew instantly that Wilbur had come back for the Necronomicon. I hastened into my clothes and rushed across to the library where a crowd had gathered before the smashed window of my office. Inside there was a fearful groaning and growling, and some instinct warned me that what was taking place there was not for unfortified eyes to see. I brushed back the crowd, motioning only to Professor Rice to come in with me. When we opened the study door, Professor Rice screamed.
No, Dr. Armitage, no, I can't.
Come, close the door. We can't let them see. He's alive, but Lord, what a job that dog's done. Torn him to bits. That's a horrible sound, that moaning. Suppose we ought to call a doctor?
A doctor? A doctor for that? No doctor in the world would know what to do for that. Look, Armitage, it's not human, nor animal. Where did it come from? Can you tell me? Can you tell me what it is?
No, I couldn't tell what Wilbur Whately was. The thing that lay half bent on its side in a pool of greenish-yellow stickiness was 9 feet tall. And the dog had torn off all the clothing and some of the skins. It was partly human, beyond a doubt, with very man-like hands and head, but the torso and lower parts of the body were fabulous. Its chest had the leathery hide of a crocodile or alligator. Below the waistline, the skin was covered with coarse black fur. And from the abdomen, long greenish-gray tentacles. Now, the limbs terminated in ridgy-veined pads that were neither hooves nor claws. And as Dr. Rice and I stood staring at this presence, the whippoorwills began to cry in unison outside the study window. And then the thing on the floor roused and mumbled.
God. 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 Shut up. God. Shut up.
Armitage, in heaven's name.
Listen. The whippoorwills. Listen. He's dead now. Look. Look, Rice. Look what's happening.
He's disintegrating.
Of course. Fast, too. Fading away. Because he isn't made of matter as we know it on Earth. I guess he took after his father. So there'll be nothing left.
His father? What was his father?
I daren't think.
I thought then that what came into our world with Wilbur Whately left with him. I forgot what he himself had told me of it, which was waiting in the sealed house Wizard Whately had built, where the cattle were driven to disappear. But Wilbur Whately left a diary, written in a strange alphabet resembling Sanskrit. And I worked off and on for weeks to decipher it. And finally, I read the following passage written by Wilbur when he was no more than 8 years old.
That upstairs is more ahead of me than I had thought it would be. And is not like to have much earth brain. I can see it a little when I make the sign or blow the powder of Ivangatsi at it. And it is like them I see Halloween on the hill. I wonder how I shall look when the earth is cleared and there are no earth beings. Maybe like that upstairs looks, which has no body, even fed with all the blood.
One morning, in a cold sweat of terror, I called Dr. Rice to my house and told him, we have to destroy what's in that farmhouse.
Why can't we just leave the thing locked up there? The house is boarded tight.
Yes, but do you think boards will hold it? Don't you realize, man, it hasn't been fed? It hasn't had blood since the 18th of September, when Wilbur Whately came here to die. We left for Dunwich that night. And we've been here on Sentinel Hill ever since, working desperately to discover the formula in time. But a week ago tonight, shortly after dawn... Yeah, hello?
Dr. Armitage, this is Lem Brown. I was just up beyond the glen, Doctor, looking for cows I lost last night.
Yes, Lem?
Well, Doctor, something's been there. Smells like thunder, and there's prints in the road. Great round prints, big as barrel heads, like an elephant has been along.
Anything else, Lem?
That's all I see. Except bushes and trees pushed back from the road like a house was drug along.
Did you hear anything?
Yes. Long toward morning, I heard a sound over toward Whately's place. A kind of ripping or tearing of wood like a big box was being opened up. Chancy, he heard it too.
Lem, who lives nearest the Whately farm?
Why, that'd be Elmer Fry's place.
Oh, he's on this line too, isn't he? Hang on and I'll ring him.
Yes, Dr. Armitage, this is Central.
I'm trying to get Elmer Fry, Central.
Doctor, he must be out somewhere, and his whole family. I was ringing there an hour ago. Earl Sawyer saw Elmer's cow stampeding in Cold Spring Glen.
Oh, you didn't get him. All right. But if you hear or see anything more, let me know. I'll be here working all day. Rice! Wake up. It's loose. It's out of the house. One family gone already. We have to work. Pray God we find that formula in time. A week since it broke loose. A week of terror and panic here in Dunwich Township. Each night it moves about the countryside, leaving the trees crushed in a 30-foot swathe, as though by a moving mountain, leaving its monstrous tracks and a trail of tarry stickiness, leaving crushed and gutted farmhouses and whole herds of cattle drained of blood. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is the story to this moment. And tonight is Halloween. Tonight we are here to... Just one moment, please. Dr. Rice... Did you hear something?
With the window closed, no.
Well, throw it open. I thought so. Listen. A sound from a thousand bending trees. A sound like the sea moving across a forest. Yes. Yes, it's coming here. Of course. All Hallows, it comes to Sentinel Hill. Dr. Rice, I'll try the formula and the powder from the altar stone. I want you to stay here at the microphone and report what you see.
Very well, Dr. Armitage.
Oh, wait a minute before I go. To any scientists who may be listening to me, If I fail, there is a possible alternative formula in Falconer's Mystical Formulae of the Middle Ages on page 24. Well, there are the whippoorwills. I better get out there. Take over, Dr. Wright.
Yes. I'll do as well as I can, Armitage. Good luck. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Armitage is climbing to the top of the hill, to the altar stone. I can see him plainly, for the moon is high and the night clear. Down the hill, toward the dark village, I can see the grasses and shrubbery bending down, marking the monster's ascent. It moves quite fast, and I feel a proximity to phases of being utterly forbidden. Now, Dr. Armitage stands now on the altar stone and is holding the powder which, if the books are correct, will make this thing for an instant visible. It is quite close to him now, perhaps 20 yards or less. He lifts his hand, he flings the powder in a wide arc. I can see... Oh, no! No!
Dr. Rice. Come in, Dunnage. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your suspense announcer. Due to conditions... Oh, just a moment, please. One moment, please. Dr. Rice, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Yes, for a moment I was overcome when I saw... Ladies and gentlemen, perhaps you can hear now the incantation of Dr. Armitage. Listen. The whippoorwills mean death. And Dr. Armitage is walking back here now. So we know that whatever it was, it is gone. It is dead. We can be thankful indeed. You see, I saw Dr. Armitage.
Yes. Did you see it, Dr. Rice?
I saw it, Lord, yes.
What did it look like to you?
It looked here. Like something made of squirming ropes, but... bigger than a barn and shaped, well, like an egg. And dozens of legs, like barrels that half closed when it stepped, and nothing solid about it. And at least 15 or 20 mouths or trunks opening and closing. But what was it?
Oh, a kind of force. A kind of force that doesn't belong in our part of space. Did you notice the half face on top?
Half face. Like a human face.
Yes, very large, but yes, quite human. And quite like Wilbur's, like all the Waitleys.
Then it was...
That's right, it was Wilbur's twin brother. And you saw what 3 weeks' growth had done. And it was the child of Lavinia's who called its father's name on Sentinel Hill, as Wizard Waitley prophesied. You heard it calling, Yog-Sotho. Ladies and gentlemen, this night is over. It is All Saints' Day. May heaven bless us all.
Well, well, well. All that digging and for nothing. After all, I've been in the scaring business for years and years, and I know that monsters don't exist. No offense there. Nice doggy, or kitty, or whatever. If you want to use my hole for a bone or whatever, be my guest. Of course I don't mind. No, I'll even give you some privacy. I'll just go on over here.
You just don't mind me. Not at all.
A vicuna, two zebras, ibexes, and one big kudu. It was swell.
I like the gazelle.
Not a Simpson said.
She teaches school, you know.
Yeah, she took a Simpson.
Well, Miss Simpson said,
if you counted every head on these quadrupeds and multiplied that number by four, we'd know how many feet went through the door if we turned them all loose.
Oh, but don't do that.
Really,
a
groovy zoo.
But anyway, what Miss Simpson said, it was a good chance to work on our floors and our heads.
A lion?
One times four.
He's got four legs and maybe a roar.
Maybe two camels
and two times four.
Eight legs, four plus a seven door.
A tiger and a lamb and a fat kudu.
We have three times four equals four legs two.
But we might have to subtract when that tiger was through. Four four-footed friends, no matter who, would have 16 legs and it's always true.
That four times four equals 16. Four times four is 20.
Now a coach and six, if you were Cinderella, would have you home by midnight.
Ah!
If those 24 legs ran fast as light.
Six times four equals 24. Seven times four equals 28.
Anyone knows that who cares about seven.
And eight antelope have 32 legs, cause eight times four is 32.
Here come a small herd of buffalo. They say they're getting extinct, you know.
I can count nine, that's 36 legs.
Nine times four equals 36.
Here come the baby buffalo.
That's good, that's 10. 10 times four, you know, is 40. 11 coyotes.
11 times four.
Went slinking over the prairie floor on all of their legs.
Equals 44.
Now 12 times 4 is as high as we go.
12 times 4 equals 48.
But there were so very, very many, many more animals standing there by the gate.
We had to use a pencil if we counted them all. We really had fun and we saw everyone.
A bear, a cougar, a jackal, a yak, a fox,
a deer, a sweet giraffe.
And I can't remember how many, many more, but we multiplied them all by 4.
And some of them begged us with a roar.
If you have any complaints, compliments, suggestions, records to lend, talent to contribute, or just want to learn more about the show, please write Mystery Playhouse 90.1, KZSU, P.O. Box B as in bad, Stanford, California, 94305.
Oh, it's almost gone out. I will blow it into life.
Ooh, that feels good. Or call now at area code 415-328-2000. Operators are standing by. Dealers' inquiries welcome.
Poof. You thought there was going to be a huge explosion, didn't you?
Welcome to the final postscript to The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. The presumably last moments of Earthling author Dent, Trillian, and the they being the only survivors of Earth before It was destroyed to make room for the new interstellar bypass. But Trillian is Baffled Beeblebrox's friend, and Beeblebrox is the owner of the new Improbability Drive spaceship, the only one of its kind, most probably, and the only ship that could possibly pick up Arthur Dent and his friend, Ford Prefect, an alien visiting Earth to catalog the final chapter of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, before they asphyxiated in space. Now, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is a computerized guide of the universe, which tells everyone everything they need to know when visiting strange new planets. Or rather, almost everything. For instance, it didn't know that the legendary planet Amagrathea really did exist, and really does manufacture planets for those who can afford to pay for them. Like the mice, for instance, who commissioned the building of the planet Earth before it was destroyed. Well, everyone, needless to say, was really aggravated, every one of the mice, that is, for now they had not only lost their planet, but they would also have to build another one exactly like it if they wanted to get the result of their organic computer program, which the Earth had been designed to run and had been running all the way up till the very surprising end. But if you didn't know any of this information, don't feel too bad, because Arthur himself only found out about it from Farthy Belfast, a native of Magrathea, who helped design both the original Earth and the upcoming new Earth Mark II. He gave Arthur a memory scan of the entire event, part of which we will repeat now to lead you into the final postscript of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, people who wait in the shadow of deep thought, honored descendants of Broom Fondel and Magic Thighs, the time of waiting is over. 7.5 million years our race has waited for this great and hopefully enlightening day, the day of the answer. Never again will we wake up in the morning and think, who am I? What is my purpose in life? Does it really, cosmically speaking, matter if I don't get up and go to work? For today, we will finally learn once and for all the plain and simple answer to all these nagging little problems of life, the universe, and everything. From today, we can enjoy our games of Brockian Ultra Cricket in the firm and comfortable knowledge that the meaning of life is now well and truly sorted out.
Nearly upon us. I detect a change in the computer. It's suddenly looking a lot more relaxed.
75,000 generations ago, our ancestors set this program in motion. In all that time, we will be the first to hear the computer speak.
Oh, an awesome prospect.
We are the ones who will hear the answer to the great question of life,
the universe,
and everything.
Prepares to speak.
Good evening.
Good evening. Oh, deep thought, do you have you
an answer for you?
Yes.
Yes, I have.
There really is one?
There really is one.
To everything? To the great question of life, the universe, and everything?
Yes.
And are you ready to give it to us?
I am.
Now?
Now.
Wow.
Though I don't think you're going to like it.
Doesn't matter. We must know it. Now.
Now?
Yes, now.
All right.
Well?
You're really not going to like it.
Tell us.
All right. The answer to everything.
Yes.
Life, the universe, and everything.
Yes.
Is.
Yes.
42.
Get lynched, you know that.
It was a tough assignment.
42? It's outrageous!
May I be permitted to make an observation?
7.5 million years' work.
I checked it very thoroughly, and that definitely is the answer. I think the problem, essentially, is that you've never actually said what the question is.
But it was the ultimate question. The question of life, the universe, and everything.
Yes. But what actually is it?
Well,
What sort of...
Everything! Just
changed everything, you know.
Exactly. Now, once you know what the question actually is, you'll know what the answer means.
Oh, terrific.
Look, all right, all right. Now, can you please tell us the question?
The ultimate question?
Yes.
Of life, the universe, and everything?
Yes.
Tricky.
But can you do it?
No.
Oh.
But I'll tell you who can.
Tell us, please.
I speak of the computer that is to come after me. A computer whose merest operational parameters I am not worthy to calculate. And yet, I will design it for you. A computer to calculate the ultimate question. A computer of such infinite and subtle complexity that organic life itself shall form part of its operational matrix. And you yourselves shall take on the forms of humble rodents and go down into the computer. Down, down, to navigate its 10 million year program. Yes, I shall design this computer for you, and I shall name it also unto you, and it shall be called...
What a dull name.
Earthman, you must awake. Wake up. You have been in a deep trance, absorbing data from the Magrathian CompuMatrix archive cells. Come, you are to meet your masters. Your arrival on our planet has caused considerable excitement. It has already been hailed as the third most improbable event in the history of the universe.
What were the first
two? Oh, probably just coincidences.
True, the Earth was just a huge computer.
Yes, and it was destroyed by the Vogons 5 minutes before the 10 million year program was completed. Well, that's bureaucracy for you.
You know, that would explain a lot of things. All through my life, I've had this strange, unaccountable feeling that something secret, something sinister was going on in the world. No one would tell me what it was.
Oh, that's just perfectly normal paranoia. Everyone in the universe has that.
Well, perhaps that means that somewhere outside even the universe, on the next scale...
Maybe. Who cares? Perhaps I'm old and tired, but I always think that the chances of finding out what really is going on are so absurdly remote that the only thing to do is say, hang the sense of it and just keep yourself occupied. Look at me. I designed coastlines. I got an award for Norway. Where's the sense in that? None that I've been able to make out. I've been doing fjords all my life. For a fleeting moment, they become fashionable, and I get a major award. In this replacement Earth we're building, they're giving me Africa to do, and of course I'm doing it with all fjords again, because I happen to like them. And I'm old-fashioned enough to think that they give a lovely Baroque feel to a continent. And they tell me it's not equatorial enough. What does it matter? Science has achieved some wonderful things, of course, but I'd far rather be happy than right any day.
And are you?
No. That's where it all falls down, of course.
Attention, please, Slarty Bartfast. Would Slarty Bartfast and the visiting Earth creature please report to the mice in the works reception area immediately?
I seem to be having this tremendous difficulty with my lifestyle.
I beg your pardon?
I'm sorry, I seem an awfully frantic thing to say.
Yes, I thought so.
It's just that I find it a bit hard to relate to all this.
It is, of course, well known that careless talk costs lives. But the full scale of the problem is not always appreciated. For instance, at the very moment that Arthur said, "I seem to be having this tremendous difficulty with my lifestyle," a freak wormhole opened up in the fabric of the space-time continuum and carried his words far, far back in time across almost infinite reaches of space to a distant galaxy where strange and warlike beings were poised on the brink of frightful interstellar battle. the two opposing leaders were meeting for the last time. And a dreadful silence fell across the conference table as the commander of the Vlahergs, resplendent in his black-jeweled battle shorts, gazed levelly at the Gugugvant leader squatting opposite him in a cloud of green, sweet-smelling steam. And with a million sleek and horribly beweaponed star cruisers poised to unleash electric death at his single word of command, challenged the vile creature to take back what it had said about his mother. The creature stirred in his sickly, broiling vapor, and at that very moment the words,
"I seem to be having this tremendous difficulty with my lifestyle,"
drifted across the conference table. Unfortunately, in the Vlaherd tongue, this was the most dreadful insult imaginable, and there was nothing for it but to wage terrible war. Eventually, after their galaxy had been decimated, it was realized that the whole thing had been a ghastly mistake, and so the two opposing battle fleets settled their few remaining differences in order to launch a joint attack on our galaxy, now positively identified as the source of the offending remark. For thousands more years, the mighty ships tore across the empty wastes of space and finally dived screaming onto the planet Earth, where, due to a terrible miscalculation of scale, the entire battle fleet was accidentally swallowed by a small dog. Those who study the complex interplay of cause and effect in the history of the universe say that this sort of thing is going on all the time, but are powerless to prevent it. It's just life, they say. Meanwhile, Arthur Dent has been escorted to the Magrathean Works reception area for a shatteringly odd meeting.
Oh, you're safe.
Am I? Oh, good.
Hi, Arthur. Come and join us.
4 trillion Zaphod. What happened to you?
Well, our host's here.
Host? What host?
Welcome to lunch, Earth creature.
What? Who said that? Oh, there's a mouse on the table.
Oh, haven't you found out yet, Arthur?
What? Oh, I see. Yes. Yes, I just wasn't quite prepared for the full reality of it.
Arthur, this is Benji Mouse.
Hi.
And this is Frankie Mouse.
Nice to meet you. Yes, thank you, Slotty Box Mouse. You may go.
Well, thank you, sir. I'll just go and get on with some of my chores.
In fact, that won't be necessary. We won't be requiring the new Earth after all. We've had this rather interesting proposition put to us.
In that, I've got 1,000 glaciers poised and ready to roll over Africa.
Well, perhaps you can take a quick skiing holiday before you dismantle them.
Skiing holiday? Those glaciers are works of art. Elegantly sculptured contours soaring pinnacles of ice, deep, majestic ravines. It would be sacrilege to go skiing on high art.
Thank you, Slotty Bart Fast. That will be all.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Well, goodbye, Earthman. Hope the lifestyle comes to
you. What? Oh, thank you. Yes. Goodbye, then. Sorry about the fjords.
Now, Earth creature, as you've gathered, we've been at this ultimate question business now for 17.5 million years.
Oh, longer, surely.
No, it just seems longer. And then, just as we're about to get somewhere, you go and let your wretched planet get blown up and, well, we're sick to death of the whole thing, to be honest.
Well, it's hardly my fault.
Yes, we appreciate that. The point is that we need a question. At least a question.
And we can either do the whole thing all over again.
God forbid.
Well, we'll come to that.
You see, the thing is, we've been offered an enormous contract to do the 5D TV chat show and lecture circuit.
What?
But we've got to have a strong product.
You see, Monkey Man, if they're just sitting there in the studio looking very relaxed and just, you know, mentioning that they happen to know the answer to the ultimate question of life, the universe, and everything, and then eventually have to admit that in fact it's 42, then I think the show's probably quite short.
Right. Yeah. No follow-up, you see.
We've got to have something that sounds good.
Something that sounds good? An ultimate question that sounds good?
Well, I mean, yes. Idealism, yes, the dignity of pure research, yes, the pursuit of truth in all its forms, but there comes a point, I'm afraid, where you begin to suspect that if there's any real truth, it's that the entire infinity of the universe is almost certainly being run by a bunch of maniacs. And if it comes to a choice between spending another 10 million years finding that out, and on the other hand, just taking the money and running, then I, for one, could do with the exercise.
But I don't understand.
Hey, get this, will you, Earthman? You are a last-generation product of that computer matrix, right? And you were there right up to the moment your planet got the finger, yeah?
Yeah.
So your brain was an organic part of the penultimate configuration of the computer program.
Right?
Well, yes, but I don't quite
see what
this is.
There's a good chance that the structure of the question is encoded in the structure of your brain. So we want to buy it of you.
What, the question?
No, your brain.
What?
Yeah, that's okay, isn't it? I mean, who's going to miss it?
Thank you very much.
I thought you said you could just read his brain electronically.
Yes, but we've got to get it out first. It's got to be prepared, treated, guys.
Thank you.
Arthur!
Hey, come on, guys. I mean, hey! It can be replaced, you know, if you think it's that important.
An electronic brain. A simple one should suffice.
A simple one?
Yeah, it can be programmed to say what, and I don't understand, and where's the T, and who'd know the difference?
What?
See what I mean?
I'd notice the difference.
No, you wouldn't. You'd be programmed not to.
Look, I'm sorry, my soul lads. I don't think we've got a deal.
Emergency, emergency, hostile ship has landed on planet. Intruders now within works reception area. Defense station,
What is it now?
Oh, bats doos, it'll be galactic police. We gotta go whoosh.
Police?
Yes, we're a stolen spacecraft.
Improbability drive ship.
Ah, so that's how the Earthman got here.
Say, Fred, did you even know it's explaining how they could make a profit on the insurance deal?
Yeah, it doesn't seem to have worked.
Come on then, let's move.
Damn. Why all that fuss over 2 pounds of earthly brain? We're going to have to invent the question. What's yellow and dangerous? 42. No, doesn't work. No. How many roads must a man walk down? Ah, that's promising. Sounds good, but doesn't actually tie you down to meaning anything. How many roads must a man walk down? 42. Excellent, Frankie.
Which way you reckon, Zaphod?
At a wild guess, I'd say down here.
Okay, move.
Okay, people, Bronx, freeze! We got you covered.
I guess it's all
cool. Okay, this way.
Right.
We don't want to shoot you, people, Bronx.
Suits me fine.
We're cornered.
Oh, hell, I've dropped my adrenaline pills. All right, behind this computer bank, get down.
They're shooting at us.
Yeah.
I thought they said they didn't want to do that.
Yeah, I thought they said.
Hey, we thought you said you didn't want to do that.
It isn't easy being a cop, Ryan.
What did he say?
He said it isn't easy being a cop.
Well, surely that's his problem, isn't it?
I'd have thought so.
Hey, listen. I think we've got enough problems of our own with you shooting at us. So if you could avoid laying your personal problems on us as well, I think we'd probably find it easier to cope.
Now, see here, you guys. You're not dealing with any dumb, two-bit, trigger-pumping morons with low hairlines, little piggy eyes, and no conversation.
No.
No, we are a couple of intelligent, caring guys who you'd probably quite like if you met us socially.
Yeah.
I don't go around gratuitously shooting people and bragging about it in seedy Space Rangers bars.
No, he doesn't.
No, I don't. I go around shooting people gratuitously and then agonize about it afterwards to my girlfriend.
Yeah, he does, and I write novels.
He writes them in crayon.
No, I haven't had any of them published yet, so I'd better warn you, I'm in a mean mood.
Yes, these guys.
I think I preferred it when they were shooting.
So, you gonna come out quietly, or are you gonna let us blast you out?
Which would you rather?
You still there?
Yes.
We didn't enjoy doing that at all.
But we could tell.
Now listen to this, people, Brox, and you better listen good.
Why?
Because it's gonna be very intelligent and quite interesting and humane.
Okay, fire away. I mean...
Sorry, Miss understanding, man.
Yeah, it was fun, though, wasn't it?
Yeah. I shoot him again for a bit.
Yeah, why not?
The computer bank is absorbing a hell of a lot of energy. Our thing's about to explode.
Well, that about wraps it up for this lifetime.
Well, it's been really nice running into you again, Zaphod.
Zaglabos, Rim, Jutic, Astro.
Beetlejuicean anthem.
Yeah.
Singing it makes us feel good at times of stress.
It is, of course, more or less at this misleading point that this part of our story ends. Though it is in many ways a remarkable story, contains much that is apocryphal, or at least wildly inaccurate, is reasonably cheap, and has the words "Don't Panic" written in large friendly letters on the cover, it is not, of course, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy itself. To obtain your copy of the actual guide, please write to Megadodo Publications, Megadodo House, Ursa Minor Beta, enclosing £4.95p for the book and 578,000 million pounds, postage and packing.
Evolving and revolving at 900 miles an hour. That's orbiting at 90 miles a second, so it's reckoned a sun that is the source of all our power. The sun and you and me and all the stars that we can see are moving at a million miles a day. In an outer spiral arm at 40,000 miles an hour of the galaxy we call the Milky Way. Our galaxy itself contains 100 billion stars. It's 100,000 light years side to side. It bulges in the middle, 16,000 light years thick, but out by us it's just 3,000 light years wide. We're 30,000 light years from galactic central point. We go round every 200 million years. And our galaxy is only one of millions of billions in this amazing and expanding universe. Expanding and expanding in all of the directions it can whiz. As fast as it can go, the speed of light you know, 12 million miles a minute, and that's the fastest speed there is. So remember when you're feeling very small and insecure, how amazingly unlikely is your birth. And pray that there's intelligent life somewhere up in space, 'cause there's bugger all down here on Earth.
I know, Count, but at least thank God it's over with. That was the... Just seeing if you were on your toes, Count. Well, I sort of had this idea, Count, like maybe we could, like, play it all backwards, you know? It would be a sort of...
The secret messages,
then. Exactly.
That would be really far out.
We'll think about that.
So, please, you can save the most scariest of the very last.
Oh.
At least, Mr. Rogers. So until next week, take it away, Roger Beatty.
And you know, the best kind of neighbors try to talk with each other about important things. Because there's so much to try to understand. So much to understand. Some things I don't understand. Some things are scary and sad. Sometimes I even get bad when I'm mad. Sometimes I even get glad. Why does a dog have to bark? Why does an elephant die? Why can't we play all the time in the park? Why can't my pussycat fly? Why, I wonder why? Why, I wonder why? Why do big people say no? Why are their voices so loud? Why don't the witches and bad guys all go? Why does the sky fly a cloud? Why, I wonder why? Why, I wonder why? Why does it have to get dark? Why can't the day always stay? Let's say goodbye to the nighttime. Goodbye. Let's send the dark time away. Why do fire engines make noise? Why is hot water so hot? Why aren't live babies like my other toys? Why do I wonder a lot? Someday, oh someday, I'll know what to say. Someday, oh someday, I'll not have to say. Why, I wonder why?
to you until next week.
Henry Fiol, señoras y señores, Henry Fiol en Maracaibo, Oriental.